KPBS On Demand is supported by UC San Diego's Art Power, presenting Ben Folds' Paper Airplane Request Tour on September 19th at the UC San Diego's Epstein Family Amphitheater. For tickets and more information, visit artpower.ucsd.edu.
Good morning, I'm Tebby Cruz. It's Friday, July 12th. Visitors and employees will now be screened for drugs at county jails. More on that next, but first, let's do the headlines. San Diego Mayor Todd Gloria announced $20 million in funding for Bridge to Home, an affordable housing program. Bridge to Home helps developers finance affordable housing projects. The $20 million announced Thursday is earmarked for new construction, site clearance, and site improvements. The city said the program has already provided $66 million in funding. The city of San Diego announced more than $12 million will be distributed to 179 arts and culture nonprofits this fiscal year. The awards vary. For example, Signet Theater is receiving more than $150,000, while arts website Vanguard Culture is getting more than $10,000. The city provides arts and culture funding each year. The amount this year is in line with the previous year. The money is generated through taxes on hotel rooms and other accommodations. San Marcos residents will get to vote on a 1 cent sales tax this November. This week, the City Council approved adding the proposal to the general election ballot. The council said if passed, it'll generate $20 million in funding per year. The money would be used for things like street and park maintenance and public safety. The election is on November 5th. Visit kpbs.org/elections to learn more. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need.
KPBS On Demand is supported by the San Diego County Toyota Dealers. Experience the new 2024 Tundra, designed to combine performance and comfort with a 12,000-pound towing capacity and 10-speed automatic transmission. See your Toyota dealer for more. San Diego County Toyota Dealers. We make it easy.
Visitors and employees will soon be screened for drugs when they enter county jails. Metro reporter Angie Bowen says the new policy is an about-face for Sheriff Kelly Martinez.
Advocates for jail safety have long been urging the sheriff's department to screen anyone entering the jail system, even sheriff's deputies, contractors, and visitors. Screenings have previously been limited to inmates. After years of resisting those calls, Sheriff Martinez announced Thursday that expanded screenings with drug detection dogs would soon begin, unannounced and at random.
I myself will go through a screening, a contraband screening, if I enter the jails. When I enter the jails, I plan to do that. Myself, so it's nobody's immune. It's from the top down.
The chair of the county's Citizens Law Enforcement Review Board praised the move, saying it would help prevent overdoses and save lives. Andrew Bowen, KPBS News.
Hotter days could mean a call on consumers to cut back on energy use. California's grid operator wants customers to prepare for flex alerts if extreme heat continues. Reporter Tanya Thorne explains what that means for San Diego.
The California Independent System Operator, or CAISO, is the agency which decides when flex alerts are needed. They typically issue flex alerts when extremely hot weather drives up electricity use, jeopardizing grid integrity. The alert is usually issued a day in advance and calls on consumers' help to avoid overwhelming the system.
And that can be as easy as, you know, unplugging your phone so it's not charging, or unplugging your laptop, not washing dishes during peak hours, so between 4 and 9 p.m.
Alex Welling is with SDG&E.
Everything that we can do to conserve energy is going to help us prevent flex alerts, is going to help us prevent the possibility of rotating outages later on.
No flex alerts are planned at the moment, but CAISO is asking all Californians to stay prepared and alert if conservation or rotating outages are needed. Tanya Thorne, KPBS News.
The heat wave that has taken over much of the county is coming to an end, but triple digits are still expected in some areas. Highs from 112 to 120 are in the forecast for the mountains and deserts. The extreme heat warning for the deserts expires tonight at 9. Find free AC at coolzones.org. coming up, behind the scenes of the Old Globe's newest Shakespeare production. We'll have that story and more just after the break.
Was along this road where Bob's jacket was found.
Almost 25 years ago, Jane Dartick's life changed forever. Her husband, Bob, was murdered, and pretty quickly, Jane became the prime suspect.
Bob Dartick was struggling with his killer, and that killer wasn't Jane Dartick.
Subscribe to Free Jane or listen on the KPBS Investigates podcast.
Creatures living miles under the ocean must withstand the kind of pressure that would crush one of us. SciTech reporter Thomas Fudge tells us some invertebrates, called comb jellies, survive it by forging a different kind of cell.
Comb jellies, which resemble jellyfish, live in many places, and some live 8,000 meters beneath the sea. They adapt to that massive water pressure at the molecular level by changing the shape of their lipids, which are the building blocks of cell membranes. Itai Budin, a biochemistry professor at UC San Diego, took part in a study. He described some lipid molecules as looking like traffic cones with a head and two chains below it that are like legs spread apart.
So what pressure does is it will actually compress those chains. And so if you have a lipid that looks like a traffic cone at high pressure, it'll look like a Coke can.
Jacob Winnikoff is a deep-sea biochemist at Harvard who partnered with Budin. He points out lipids can't all be like Coke cans. Some of them still need to be traffic cones or, if you play badminton, a shuttlecock.
What we see in the deep-sea comb jellies is they've rearranged some of the atoms in these lipid molecules so that even under pressure, they're still shuttlecock-shaped.
Deep-sea comb jellies can't survive in low-pressure environments. They disintegrate. Thomas Fudge, KPBS News.
Old Globe artistic director Barry Edelstein has adapted Shakespeare's historical trilogy, Henry VI, into a two-part epic called Henry VI. Arts reporter Beth Accomando takes us behind the scenes of this ambitious production that will complete the Globe's Shakespeare canon after almost 90 years.
Ever wonder what it would be like to be sitting in Shakespeare's Globe Theater and seeing one of his plays for the very first time?
I love the idea that one can think about a play of Shakespeare as a new play.
And you essentially can, says the Globe's artistic director, Barry Edelstein, because Shakespeare's Henry VI plays are so rarely produced that most people have probably never seen them. They also reveal Shakespeare as a young playwright trying to make a name for himself.
It's this sense of, look at me, watch me flex my muscles as a writer and do these audacious things, which gives the production and the plays themselves this great energy and this great sort of youthful exuberance.
Edelstein's work began almost a decade ago when he decided to adapt the Bard's historical trilogy into a more manageable two-part play, rechristened Henry VI.
The three plays tell one story of the reign of the English king Henry VI, which was in the 15th century, during which there was a dynastic struggle, a civil war between two families, the House of York and the House of Lancaster.
It's an epic tale about power, politics, and people who are driven more by personal ambition than idealism.
When people dispense with a sense of the greater good, a sense of the public good, and look only for their own personal power, inevitably chaos and violence results.
Shakespeare's plays continue to resonate because he understood how human nature results in history repeating itself, says actress Elizabeth A. Davis.
I don't know if that should horrify us or comfort us, but I think that it speaks to Shakespeare's brilliance that we are still coming back to the humanity that he gives us, or the lack thereof.
Davis plays Margaret of Anjou, the French woman who married King Henry.
And so when I look at Henry, who is called inept and weak and doesn't do what is in his charge to do, Margaret on the page is furious about it. Margaret does indeed step into those deficits, and she takes over and becomes, in essence, king, a functional king.
Margaret displays a ferociousness in the play that earns her the title She-Wolf of France. But Davis sees her as someone seeking security in a very dangerous political landscape.
I see a woman desperate to keep her son safe and to try to keep hold of a kingdom that her husband is unable to bring together. So it's a function of necessity.
Henry is one of Shakespeare's most fascinating characters, says Edelstein.
Henry is a religious man, Henry is a bookish man, Henry is a philosophical man, and he doesn't really like the rough and tumble of politics, and he doesn't really like the violence of war.
Keshav Mudlayer plays Henry.
Welcome, Queen Margaret. I can express no kinder sign of love than this kind kiss.
More than anything, I think of him as a kind person. He's described as a kind king, a caring king.
But kindness and caring are not often valued in the cutthroat world of politics.
His weakness, if we can say there is a weakness, is that he's not able to convince the people around him that discourse and conversation and peace, that's the way we can solve these problems, you know? And he has a line where he says, "My crown is in my heart, not on my head." I think that does capture him very beautifully in a verse line of, he embodies all those things about leadership and what it means to be a king, but in a way which you can't quite see.
The plays show how political decisions by leaders affect the lives of regular people. And as audiences prepare to go to the polls in November to pick a president, Shakespeare's Henry VI may prove especially relevant. Beth Accomando, KPBS News.
The Henry VI plays are running through September at the Old Globe's Lowell Davies Festival Theater. That's it for the podcast today. This podcast is produced by Emmeline Mohebi and edited by Brooke Ruth. We had help from producer Laura McCaffrey and reporter John Carroll this week. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. And now you can find our Comic-Con coverage at kpbs.org/Comic-Con. I'm Tebby Cruz. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.
And it was along this road where Bob's jacket was found.
Almost 25 years ago, Jane Daratic's life changed forever. Her husband, Bob, was murdered. And pretty quickly, Jane became the prime suspect.
Bob Daratic was struggling with his killer, and that killer wasn't Jane Daratic.
Subscribe to Free Jane or listen on the KPBS Investigates podcast.